We take a look back at the career of Sam Cook with a very special guest next here on Locked On Ravens.
You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Allstrecker of Ravens Wire. We're here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Ravens your first listen of the day. We're free and available on all platforms. And we're back here. It's a Friday edition, a bittersweet Friday edition, as Sam Cook announcing his retirement after 16 years in the NFL. We'll be diving into all that today with our Friday guest, a Super Bowl champion, former Baltimore Ravens wide receiver, Kadri Ismail. Q. It's kind of crazy to think Sam Cook no longer will be punting for the Baltimore Ravens. How you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Definitely heard the news and went down memory lane, and just what an incredible career for an athlete and an amazing player, but more importantly, basically signing off on a fabulous career with we have come to know fondly here in Baltimore as the Wolfpack. With him, Morgan Cox, and obviously Justin Tucker. Just what a remarkable special teams unit of consistency with Sam leading the way. And just what a great teammate, what a great person. He and I have interacted with one another so many times. I am saying right now, I know my teammate and Matt Stover is in the Ring of Honor. No question about it. If there was ever a lock for the Ring of Honor, It's Sam Cook.
I absolutely agree. And some people said, oh, really, a punter in the Ring of Honor? Well, I'll say yes, a punter in the Ring of Honor. I would be shocked if Sam Cook didn't make it there. He certainly deserves that. But Q, we'll talk about Sam Cook in the second and third segments, kind of go down memory lane as he's talked about. But in the first segment, I do want to talk about the schedule with you a little bit. We didn't have the chance to get into it. And Baltimore's schedule, not as crazy and wonky as we saw in 2021 with that Cleveland stuff that kind of did not go in the Ravens' favor. But Baltimore, Q, starting off with their first four games against the AFC East, something that I personally have never seen before. Then you have four of their last five games against divisional opponents. And I want to start off with the divisional games for you, especially in that back half of the year. How important is it for them to go, let's say, 3-1 in those four divisional games? Because last year they went 1-5 in their division, and that was one of the worst records in the NFL. So how do you feel like that back half divisional schedule is in terms of importance for this team?
Yeah, well, divisional games, you know, clearly when it comes to getting into the playoffs and advancing through it, it's about your division and it's about winning the division. I think it's important for them to get off to a fast start because you had the high expectations last year. Those high expectations, when it comes down to it, you're literally talking about health. If you're healthy, the if button. If you're healthy, you have a chance to really advance into the playoffs because you're that good of a team. Well, this year, okay, everybody seems to be tracking towards a better health. And I think anytime you can stack those wins early on, it gives you that cushion for what you know is going to be a grind later on in the year. I think it establishes your identity. I think it establishes that you are a for real team. And the Ravens, you know, their expectations themselves personally is one of, hey, we need to go out there and continue to be in the mix, in the conversation of one of the upper tier elite teams. They already did it through the offseason with the draft. And now when you look at the schedule, it's all right there before them. And how they're going to handle those different pressures remains to be seen.
Right, and I think starting off there in week five, you have Cincinnati Sunday Night Football at home. That's their first primetime game, first of three. And Q, I was a little personally shocked that the Ravens didn't get at least four primetime games. Now, when looking at it a little deeper, you think, okay, the team kind of struggled towards the end of the season, and it's a what have you done for me now lately league. So, you know, obviously teams like the Bengals get the five primetime games, but did it shock you at all that Baltimore, instead of having five or even four, got three primetime games?
Honestly, I've done this for so long, and I've recognized that when it comes to scheduling, the pretty girl gets all the love. And I just think that ultimately they, you know, the Ravens, they have put themselves in a situation. You made your bed, you got to lay in it. And I think that's one of the things it looks for when it talks about, what a scheduling, if I'm a producer, sure, I can flex some games if button happens again. And if you have the Ravens in the mix, then sure, we can look about and think about and do that, later on in the year. But, as you mentioned with the scheduling, from a primetime game standpoint, Cincinnati being on that primetime stage, bruh, that's awesome. But at the same time, who wants to see the Jets? Who wants to see the Giants? No one. And so that's where it comes down to it. You don't have an upper tier elite schedule. You got a what? What were they? Third in the division. So that's what you're going to get. Just an average schedule. And that's okay. I think that it's good. In my looking at it, it's good that the Ravens are the hunter and no longer the hunted. I think they perform well when they have somebody to go after. And I think that's a good thing.
Right, and we saw before 2019 how Baltimore was that kind of sneaky team that would make the wild card, then sneak up on you in the playoffs or win their division by a little bit. And they liked that. They loved playing at 1 o'clock. They also like playing under the lights, don't get me wrong, but they're a team that thrives under that. Hey, we're gonna come get you and you're not gonna expect it. And we're a good team and we know it. You might not, but you're gonna find out. So it seems like after 2019, again, that target was kind of placed on their back. And they had to respond to that a little bit. They did well in some areas, not so well in others. But now with those three primetime games and not five, they'll have to work their way back up to those five primetime games. Because right now you mentioned it, Cincinnati in primetime, five games for them. It makes a lot of sense based off of what they were able to do. But Hugh, there are a couple games that at least I look at and I circle on the calendars, games where they're really important and games that just should be really good ones overall. I look to Buffalo in week 4, Josh Allen. That's a huge matchup between Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen there. Tampa Bay, the Ravens traveling there. Lamar Jackson 1-0 against Tom Brady in his career. Maybe he can make it 2-0. And then I look to the week 18 game against Cincinnati. And I think probably those two are going to be fighting for a playoff spot, maybe for the division at that point. Are those three games, Buffalo, Tampa Bay, and Cincinnati, big for you based off of opponents and also just this pure scale of what they could be?
Yeah, of course. I think anytime it's an NFC opponent, meh, those are games where you don't necessarily circle and underline, but the fact that it's Tom Brady, I think from a legacy standpoint, he kind of stamped, if you will, the next guy is Lamar Jackson. So that remains to be seen. Obviously, that's we saw what happened when New England came up to Baltimore and Bully Ball was in full effect and Bully Ball whooped up on them something fierce. So, there's that. But I think for the Bills game, I think for the Bengals game, it's about home field advantage. It's about playoff seeding. You got to be AFC opponents. Upper tier AFC opponents, you get a little bit more swag. You get a little bit more respect when it comes to playing up against them, whether it be on the road or at home. You got to go up against your upper tier AFC opponents and get it done.
Right. And because the Ravens did finish last in the division, they're going to be playing a fourth place schedule. So you look at Cincinnati's back half, and they have to play teams like Tennessee and Kansas City, and obviously Baltimore in there as well. And so the Ravens, they'll have some opportunities to play a team like a Jacksonville, which is an AFC opponent. And that's a team you have to get it done against, because if you lose to a Jacksonville, that hurts your AFC record. It hurts your overall record. But then you also have the really tough games like Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, even Cleveland, depending on what happens, obviously with Deshaun Watson off the field. But you're looking at those games, you're looking at the Ravens schedule, and I see them potentially as maybe in the 11 to 13 win range. Do you see them kind of going in that range? Do you see them maybe as a 10 win team, a 14 win team? Where are you in terms of wins for them right now?
So I think the unknown is, Kohler and Likely, along with Ronnie Stanley. Linderbaum, I think he's going to be fine. If you can, kind of see where I'm going, it's all about Bully Ball. And so I think running backs, they have a good chance to get back healthy in that regard. They did bring in some guys. I look at the offense as the key because I think defensively, being retooled, Mike McDonald, I think he's going to be phenomenal. I think he's going to bring back that swagger that was a little bit lost in the final year of Wink Martindale for whatever the reason. You said it's the fourth place schedule, so defensively is not going to be an issue. I think Bully Ball has to really set its tone. So in my mind, I think this fourth place schedule deserving of a dominating 13 type of a win season.
Yeah, that range does seem really, really accurate. It seems like there might be a game where the Ravens are expected to win it, then they somehow lose it. There'll be a game that everybody expects them to lose. They'll come back and they'll win that. So the schedule is such a fluid thing. But for right now, I agree with you, Q. Right in that 11-13 win range, the fourth place schedule has a lot to do with that as well. I think that's very realistic. We'll head into our first break here, though. When we get back, we'll be diving into the career of Sam Cook. So be sure to stay tuned. Still a ton to talk about here on Locked On Ravens. First, though, I do want to tell you a bit about Bet Online. And our partners at Bet Online continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's basketball playoffs, which are still going on in the conference finals, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even next season's NFL futures. Bet Online is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. So be sure to head to their website, use the mobile device, learn more about the trends in action, Bet Online, where the game starts. We're back here. Our second segment of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Allshaker still here with Kadri, Ismael, and Q. Again, it doesn't feel real to me that after 16 years, Sam Cook is not going to be the one back there punting for the Baltimore Ravens, a player that has meant so much to the organization. Obviously, we know how much they value special teams. But I wanted to start off by asking you just what you think of when you think of Sam Cook and what he brought to this organization, both on and off the field.
So Sam, I think, you know, coming from Nebraska, it was one of those things where it's like, all right, cool. You know, you got a punter and what Sam Cook is going to be about. But then what you saw was just a phenomenal athlete, a guy who from the Super Bowl years, the playoff runs with, you know, Joe Flacco and company, you just saw versatility. You saw, you know, just as much pride with the defense, with, you know, obviously what the offense did back then. You saw it equally with the special teams. That's what he brought. Then you add in, you know, a Randy Brown, who special teams special assistant, and the way in which, you know, both he and Justin Tucker and Morgan Cox grew. There's four men who got together, and of course they formed the Wolfpack, and that just took off. I loved the fact that they were able to be so incredibly consistent. A lot of it had to do with just the way Sam had a competitive spirit of excellence. And it was just so self-evident. Such a humble guy, tremendous, you know, teammate. You know, when I've been out to different Raven events and he's been at them supporting his different teammates and stuff, like, you know, Sam is Sam. He's been the consistent guy throughout. Those are the things that I remember about Sam Cook as a Raven, and he is the epitome. You know, once a Raven, always a Raven, play like a Raven. He is the epitome of that level of excellence.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And when looking at just what he brought, it was both on and off the field, as you talked about. He wasn't just this guy who would go do his job, then, you know, not really engage with anyone. He was somebody who showed that support. And I think when you saw all his teammates at his retirement press conference, you saw how much he meant to so many guys within the organization, how emotional that press conference got. I mean, he cares. He cares about the organization, and he's going to stick with the organization, as it was announced by the team that he's going to stick on as a special teams consultant. I think that's great news. I mean, Coach Sam Cook kind of feels right to me. He'll be able to work with Jordan Stout a lot and hopefully at least make sure that Stout is on the right track to potentially filling his shoes. Although I know there won't be necessarily another Sam Cook. Jordan Stout, I think, has a ton of potential. So, I mean, how thrilled were you that Sam Cook is going to stay on here with the Ravens and be that special teams consultant?
Yeah, I think that was genius of John Harbaugh and Randy Brown and obviously Eric DaCosta signing off on it. You know, I think there's this fine line of coaching, but also guys who've been there and done that. You know, guys who've been in the fire and can see things that you might not be able to see, can express it to guys like a Jordan Stout in ways that maybe perhaps even the likes of a Randy Brown cannot. So Sam Cook being on the staff, I think there is a familiarity there. There's a leadership element there. You know, he's not much of a rah-rah guy, but I think his presence will be felt in the locker room. And just, again, when it comes down to it, Like, holy wow, just an amazing wealth of information that Jordan gets the chance to absorb and learn, and hopefully, he takes it all in and does his thing. But yeah, kudos to Sam Cook.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Jordan Stout, Q, the Ravens obviously spent a fourth round pick on him. They think very, very highly of what he can bring to the table. And he reminds a lot of people of some of the things that Sam Cook brought to the table. Great ball placement. You have the hang time, the strong leg. I mean, how confident are you now with this 16-year veteran on the way out, a rookie coming in, that this will be a smooth transition over? There might be a few bumps along the way, but it could be, I think, a lot smoother than people might anticipate.
Yeah, it's weird because I think part of the comfort that we had was just Sam going out there and just being ready. I mean, the being ready part, you just take it for granted, and that's not going to be there. So there's an unknown. I mean, the dude's a rookie. It's not like he's just going to be like, all right, here we go. You're going to be amazing. We got to see it. Every position. You could say this: every position that is played, there's a benefit of the doubt. You can do it in preseason. You could do it in practice. They believe in you. When you talk about special teams and kicking, there is no more nerve-wracking for a general manager, a scout, a coach than. Have they done it under fire? You know how it is when they make a new sub or they make a new battleship. It technically isn't deemed seaworthy until they actually put it in the crucible. And when they do, then it's like, all right, cool. Well, now we know it's battle tested. Now we know that it handled the first storm. Okay, now this is the real deal. Same thing, I think, in this scenario. We're not going to know what, Jordan can do until Jordan does it in a live moment. What happens when you go to Heinz Field and the turf is one way during pregame and then it changes up during the game and first quarter to the fourth quarter, or you need to down the ball inside the 20 and Sam taught you this new technique. Are you going to be able to execute it? You executed it all week in practice. But I'm telling you, in the coach's eye, it doesn't matter. It's whether or not you can execute it during the actual game. So all that is going to come into play for the young Jordan Stout. But good, he has a mentor in Sam Cook.
Yeah, I think it's going to pay so many dividends for Stout when you're looking maybe 5 years from now and how Sam Cook is able to impact his career. However long he does end up staying with the Ravens, I think that it'll pay off a ton for him. But Q, I want to go back to the Wolfpack because it is now just Justin Tucker, Morgan Cox departing for Tennessee a year ago, now Cook retiring. The new special teams group is Nick Moore, Jordan Stout, and Justin Tucker. But that group of Morgan Cox, Sam Cook, and Justin Tucker, I mean, there are so many memories associated with it. And we'll talk about more memories in the final segment. But what kind of sticks out to you about the bond that they were able to build with each other over the course of their tenures with the Ravens?
Yeah, I was the radio guy for the Ravens for a few seasons, and it was one of those things where when I was on the sideline, you just saw the artistry of the way in which they worked. The little things that you kind of I took for granted. So if I am an active player and doing my thing and didn't realize, excuse me, what they did. Like, it is so phenomenal the way in which, for example, M&T Bank Stadium, there's a swirling wind that some people don't realize, how it rolls. You'd be thinking the way the wind comes in from Fed Hill and pushes its way out. It is crazy on field level compared to upper tier levels of the vault. With that said, the guys in which they would be practicing on the sideline, they would turn according to where the guys were going. So if it was on our screen from left to right, or even from right to left, wow, you can take that for granted. They would do it seamlessly. They would put themselves in position to always be confident in their kick. They were always what I call present. It wasn't about where is the kicker at? We got to go find him. Or what's going to happen with the weather. It was a mode of consistency with the Wolfpack. And then, of course, when it comes down to sneaks and special plays, they were in lockstep, clearly. And then at the same time, when it came to obviously sealing the game, one of the biggest memories that I have is being in New Orleans at the Super Bowl, calling a game, and Sam has to run out of the clock. And, by rule, you can hold all you want because technically, who cares if you get a penalty? It's still your ball and you'll be okay. So you're seeing from Sam running around to Morgan literally tackling guys, all of that. It was just really super cool to see just the fine-tuned details of professionalism, again, of what we affectionately call the Wolfpack.
Right, and I think it was so great that they were able to have so much fun with it too, while also being ready in the big moment. So it wasn't like they were all fun, and then when it came down to go time, that they couldn't execute. They were able to execute and also built that bond with each other that I think they're going to have for the rest of their lives, those three. I think it'll be great to kind of see how it even continues to grow with guys coming back, Sam Cook still being with the organization. And maybe, who knows, Morgan Cox, when he's done, he could potentially come back too. But we'll head into our final break. When we get back, we'll be diving into memories of Sam Cook's career with the Ravens. So be sure to stay tuned. Still a ton to talk about on Locked On Ravens, of course. First though, I do want to tell you about Built Bar. And for brownie batter, it's something that I really like a ton. And people can eat half a bunch of brownie batter. But if you could lick the brownie spatula clean and get some protein, and you're in luck because Built has a new creation. This one is better than ever in the brownie batter puff. You heard me right. This puff takes protein bars to a whole new level, and they're available right now at built.com with 140 calories, 17 grams of protein, and only 7 grams of sugar. Brownie batter puffs are the perfect pick-me-up for any day, and they're made with protein with your body that absorbs more efficiently, and it provides a ton of health benefits as well. So go to built.com to get brownie batter puffs now. Go to built.com, use promo code LOCK15. Get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at build.com. We're back here, our final segment of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Kadri Ismail on this Purple Friday. And Q, I want to start right where you left off in New Orleans with that Sam Cook play. I mean, something that at the time, was something that just blew a lot of people away because I don't think a lot of people expected it. And I want to know if you, when you were calling that game, what if you thought on that fourth down punt he was going to hold that ball? And he took a lot of time off that clock too. It wasn't like he kind of stood there for 3 seconds and went out. He took multiple seconds. Was that something you were expecting? And I mean, how excited were you that they executed it so well also?
It's funny because who was it? Jerry Rossberg, who was his special teams coach. Obviously, Randy Brown being a kicking specialist. But Jerry, it's interesting because his attention to detail was so phenomenal. And here's the thing. If you have attention to detail, you're a really good coach. That's all well and good. You also have to have guys that are talented so you can execute whatever you want to execute in your brain. So for him, he had the luxury of having a very cerebral guy. A guy with great athletic ability too. The athletic ability of Sam is that of legend. So yeah, Sam Cook, just phenomenal, phenomenal execution. But the confidence that they had in knowing that he would do that and know how to do it speaks volumes. You'd be amazed. Some special teams, punters and even kickers, whatever, they're kind of a little, they march to the beat of their own drum, and that's fine. But you don't get as confident in doing things like Sam did, and Sam had poise, just knowing, hey, I'm gonna click off some time off the clock, I'll be all right.
Yeah, and then the best thing about it was, what was it, 2017? They did it again against Cincinnati to end that game, where you literally had guys holding their like five different flags on the field. And then that actually, the NFL, they took it out. They said you can't do that anymore. And John Harbaugh had outsmarted everyone, and that organization outsmarted everyone. So now if you do that, if you have the play in the Super Bowl, if you do what they did against Cincinnati, it's a penalty, and the time doesn't run off anymore. You actually have to do something else with it. But when looking at Sam Cook, obviously we know the punter he was, but the thrower the thrower of the football that he was, the fakes that he was able to pull off. He had an 87.5 completion percentage. And it really seemed like every time they ran a fake with him, you thought, oh, first down. This is a first down, because you knew a completion was coming. I mean, how much are you going to miss those Sam Cook dropbacks and those 15, 20-yard passes?
Man, between him and Marlon Brown would probably be still on a gosh doggone team if Sam Cook was his quarterback. They just had a connection, and Sam, you know, accuracy, trust, tight spiral. Did I say accuracy? Like, come on, this is the NFL. You spend, you know, a very long time trying to hone that talent in, and Sam made it look good. I mean, it's just the bottom line. Sam was that good when it came to throwing a ball. You got to know the situation. I got to know that the defensive back is going to, you know, run away, or I got to know via my film study. So there's a little bit of anticipatory, you know, mood and mindset when it comes to doing something like that. So I think for overall, the way Sam, you know, again, just played the game, it just really, it was a luxury to have a guy like that.
And even talking about throwing, Sam Cook as a runner had a couple moments as well. He'd taken back to the Super Bowl year against the then Oakland Raiders when he ran that ball as the holder into the end zone, gave a little spike at the end of that thing too. Do you remember that one?
Bruh, they were so angry because it was, oh, we're running up to score. Oh, what is this? Oh. And the bottom line was he saw what he saw. They studied it and they were like, hey, skip it. Go ahead. Call it. And they called it. And it worked. Yeah. Again, the legend of Sam Cook.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, no lead is safe in the NFL. That one probably was, but it was still something where Sam Cook wasn't going to just lie down and just go down. He wanted that touchdown. The Ravens called it. And that's something that I'm going to remember for a really long time. But Q, with the ball placement that Sam Cook had, I mean, I could go on for hours about how he was able to place that ball inside the 20, inside the 10, and he really changed what punting was. I mean, you saw the directional kicks left, right, center, but then you start to be able to pin guys back, and it's really just an art form that he was able to do. I mean, how impressed were you with the evolution of his game, what he was able to do, not just for his game, but the evolution of punting in general in the NFL?
Yeah, I remember he said he developed, what was it, at one time 16, and it grew into some 32 different ways to punt the ball, something crazy like that. I'll have to ask him next time I see him. But, you know, just by his foot placement, by the ball placement, gave it a little flair from a rugby perspective. You know, the ball, like from a golfer's aspect of things, it would have backspin, so it's not, you know, going forward. It would have side spin, which – wow, you know, it was just unheard of. Those avenues to access, you know, the ball and the field position of the ball was a luxury and a weapon. The NFL, it's geared towards offense, so your defense has a better chance if you're pinning back an opponent. And that's what I think Sam Cook brought to the table, his ability to pin his opponent back and then let the defense go out there. I think much of the success of the defense is a direct correlation to the beautiful technique of punting of Sam Cook.
It is, and we all know how much the Ravens do value that special teams unit, and it takes a very special player, not just even punter, but a very special player to be talked about in the way that he's been talked about by so many, and the celebrations that's been had about his career, because through 16 years, he could have suited up for 257 games in a Ravens uniform. He suited up for 256 of those. The only one that he missed was he went on the COVID list at the end of the 2020 season, so he was someone who you knew was going to go out there, perform, the reliability that you had, the sense of stability that you had when Sam Cook came out there. But now, you know, he's going to stay with the organization. It's Jordan Stout's time to come in, fill those shoes in whatever way he can. And I'm excited to see how it'll go for sure. But Q, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for hopping on and kind of remembering the career of Sam Cook. It's been nice to kind of go down memory lane with you here.
I'm telling you right now, he is going to be in the Ring of Honor. It'll be a crime and a shame if he's not, but I'm saying it first. He absolutely deserves. He has the credentials to be in that hallowed space, and what a way to just celebrate him, but then also the Wolfpack and how dominant it was, and a lot of it had to do with the leadership of Sam Cooke.
Right. It's the end of an era in one sense, but it's also the beginning of a new one in another. So I'm excited to see what the future holds. But really, congratulations to Sam Cooke. I mean, a phenomenal, phenomenal career and what he was able to do for this organization over the course of his 16 years. But that's all I have for you today on Locked On Ravens. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to take a 2-day break. When we get back here on Monday, we'll be diving into more Ravens content. So be sure to stay tuned for that. And I will see you on Monday.